It is 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. Central Daylight Time here in the Twins. Currently, well, I'm getting a signal. It's either 13 degrees, 14 degrees, or 15 degrees, depending upon what source you're looking at here. That's 15 degrees Fahrenheit above zero. Although we're going to drop down tonight, overnight, about minus 2 below zero. But it's fear not, it's going to warm up over the weekend here. Tomorrow up to 20, and then on Sunday, 31 degrees. So enjoy that warmth out there, all you Minnesotans. You know what I'm talking about. All right. We're coming up now here on Turtle Island time. About 1 minute away from that. That is how we keep track around time here at the 6 o'clock hour here at KFAI Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM HD1 in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and streaming around the planet at KFAI.org. We are non-commercial community-powered radio, and we have been for over 46 years. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Programming on KFAI is made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota and our wonderful listeners just like you. Well, here we go. It is time for Good Medicine with your host, yours truly, Roya in the Evening.
Let's live it up.
Let's live it up.
I got my money.
Hey,
let's spin it up.
Let's spin it up.
Go out and smash it.
Smash it.
Like oh my god.
Like oh my god.
Jump out that sofa.
Come on.
Let's get off. Fill up my cup.
Drink.
Mazel tov. Look at her dancing.
Move it, move it.
Just take it off. Let's paint the town.
Paint the town.
We'll shut it down.
Shut it down.
Let's burn the roof.
And then we'll do it again.
Let's do it, let's do it, let's do it,
let's do it,
and do it, and do it, let's live it up and do it, and do it, and do it, do it, do it, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it, do it, do it, do it. Here we come, here we go, we gotta rock,
rock, rock, rock.
Easy come, easy go, now we on top,
top, top, top, top.
Feel the shot, body rock, rockin' don't stop.
Yeah, I got a feeling tonight's gonna be a good night. Just like the Black Eyed Peas are saying here. That's from 2009, The End. E-N-D is that album there as well. So I hope you enjoyed that. There was a reason I played that was I was talking to my son about when he was in high school. We could hear him upstairs getting ready for school, and we'd hear all this music coming from upstairs, the bedroom, sometimes the bathroom, and that's one of the songs I remember. it's more applicable to tonight because I know we're going to have a good night tonight. So all of you Black Eyed Peas fans out there, including Taboo fans, and we might have something a little from him later in the hour as well. Well, Buju Han, Karahi, to all of my relatives out there across Minnesota, Turtle Island, and to all of those Indian canoes out on the lakes, rivers, and out to sea. Yes, this is Good Medicine, and I am your host, Royal Whitey Eagle Taylor, coming to you tonight. I am your Femme Jam, your Girl Friday, your Lady of the Evening, and we're going to have a good time tonight as well. We're sending out some big auntie energy across the Milky Way to our ancestors, and I guarantee you we're going to make our ancestors proud tonight. All right. Well, and we're going to have a little bit of music as well in between and a couple of messages here, but let's go ahead and get started right away here. I don't want to waste this time, this very precious time that we have going here for the next 52 minutes or so. I want to introduce and bring up here in the studio live with me my very own, our baby of the family, our very own son, our only begotten son here. Gee, it sounds biblical, doesn't it? Rory Weeks Gillis Taylor. And he has just come in from Los Angeles, California, Hollywood. And he's going to share with us his experiences the first few months of graduate school at the University of Southern California, but so much that he's been introduced to and getting exposed to in the film industry, both studio scale and also small independent offerings, and sort of the native scene out there in Los Angeles and Hollywood as well. He's in town with his partner, Phoebe, and we're just enjoying their company, his mom and I. And they're going to be here for a little bit longer. But he so kindly agreed to accept the invitation to come on and talk with us. It's been a while since I think he might have been in high school the last time he was on when I was hosting First Person Radio along with Laura Waterman Woodstock. So, all right, let me just go ahead and introduce you to Rory. He is a graduate of the Blake School here in the Twin Cities and Pomona College in Help me, Roy. Where's that? I know it's in the Inland Empire.
Hello. My name is Rory. Pomona College is in Claremont, California.
Claremont. I always get it confused with Pomona or...
Yeah, the Inland Empire, as they call it.
Yeah. And then, so he graduated there, and then he also spent some time in New Zealand at the University of Auckland as well. And now he is matriculated at the University of Southern California in the School of Cinematic Arts, is what they call it, right?
The film school.
Film school. In the producers program as well. So he's going to share with us a little bit about that. But let's just go ahead and kind of set the conversation this afternoon or this evening, Rory. First of all, I'll just say, as I've already identified, that full disclosure, he is my flesh and blood, my son here. So I'm just going to talk to him as if we would be talking in the living room or in the car. Not going to be any pretense that, I have any professional objectivity, because we all know that that's been thrown out the window with all these mainstream media types here, you know. All right, let's go ahead and get started then, Rory. Why don't you tell us, however you want to introduce yourself, and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. My name is Rory. I am Roy's son. Let's see. I wasn't prepped for this. So I'm coming up on the fly.
Get used to it.
I'm like nominally a fan of the Black Eyed Peas. I don't remember playing that song in high school, but I'm not saying it didn't happen. But I don't remember it. I'm currently a student at the Peter Stark Producing Program, the University of Southern California, in the film school, or the School of Cinematic Arts. And I grew up, I'm a native son of Minneapolis, and very proud to be from South Minneapolis, and I'm excited to be back home. Yeah, that's kind of what I got for you.
Well, of course, you're still currently a proud member of the Pawnee Nation of Oklahoma, but also Choctaw as well. I know you've been thinking about...
Card-carrying member.
Yes, that's true. You've been thinking about, though, trying to get enrolled as well with the Choctaw Nation in Oklahoma.
Well, that might happen. I'm not... If there's any Pawnee or Choctaw listeners out there, don't feel like that's a... I'm willing to be courted.
Don't be sending any cards and letters here to KFAI. We're just expressing your pleasure or displeasure either way there. So I know we do have a lot of relatives who listen occasionally. So, all right. Well, Rory, you know, you were very active while you were here in a lot of different interests and a lot of different pursuits. Athletics, I know you played... football, ice hockey, and lacrosse, and were very successful at those. In fact, you had a chance to play football for 3 years at Pomona, the Division III level. But you were also a good representative of Native youth. I know you were selected by the Center for Native American Youth out of Washington, D.C., and you spent a year as one of their ambassadors. And I know you were also selected as the Native American Youth of the Year here in Minnesota as well. So tell us a little bit about anything that might have affected your interest in either higher education and specifically the pursuit of the courses of study that you chose. You were in international affairs, international economy, indigenous affairs that took you to New Zealand as well. So. And then we'll get to this pivot to the arts, the cinematic arts.
Okay. Big question. Thank you for listing my resume. I don't know. I think one of the things that I really love about stories is that we don't make stories in the moment. We make stories to give meaning to the things that are happening to us. So I I think the story that I really have told myself about my own education is I'm in film school now, but I kind of grew up doing just, I don't know, like being a kid, and I played a lot of sports, and I think that's a pretty common experience for kids in Minneapolis. I really liked being on teams. I really liked, I think, getting to feel like I was a part of a team. I have one sister who has been on the show. They've been in the Good Medicine universe, but she's 11 years older than me, so I didn't have any like siblings who, you know, were like a year or two apart. So I felt like I had a lot of siblings when I was playing on teams, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, I think, growing up. I thought I did, and I'll still, maybe the one thing that I did know I want to do is I was listening to a podcast with Bobby Wilson, Bobby Dews, who is a writer and a screenwriter, and he said something basically to paraphrase of like, you know, I don't know that I love filmmaking, but I love Native people, and I think, you know, that's kind of the through line that I tell myself is all the things that I've done are really because I love you know, my family and my community, and you know, the many indigenous communities that I feel like a part of, and you know, the filmmaking identity that I think is most prominent in my life right now is just another extension of that. So yeah,
you know, I know there's quite a few renowned film schools, acting programs around the country. NYU is one of them. UCLA, right in.
Yeah.
I hope it's okay to mention them.
Yeah, that's
now that you're at USC.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It has a great
AFI,
program.
Chapman. Yeah,
yeah. And then there's others around the country. I know that we were just talking about this morning, your mom and I, about how places like New Mexico and Atlanta now are emerging, and we've always known about in Canada, mm-hmm. Vancouver, Toronto, mm-hmm. as being film centers as well. What was it then that appealed to you about University of Southern California and that program?
Good question. I think really what appealed to me about USC was, so I'd kind of been in filmmaking. I'd been living in New Zealand, and I was not a, I think the seed of filmmaking was planted a really long time ago with me. For two different filmmakers, both of whom are African American, I think, say pieces that really resonated with me. Number one was Barry Jenkins. Someone asked him once, like, what are your greatest influences? And he said, I think, you know, for most Black storytellers, it's our ancestors, first and foremost. And I really identify with that. You know, I feel like I grew up listening to really vivid and powerful stories from my elders and ancestors. And second was Ryan Coogler, who was actually, like, I think the person that most inspired me to go into filmmaking. If he's listening or ever hears this, is like, because I have a very vivid memory of being in Redwood City, California, and I'd seen Fruitvale Station, which was his first film, and I thought it was good. I was like in high school, so I was like, this is cool. But it was like when I saw Creed and felt very seen, and I remember like going home and Googling him. I was staying at a friend's house, and so he had played college football as well, and so I was like, oh, like this isn't, you know, this is doable. You don't have to be like an arts or a sports kid. You could be an arts and a sports kid. And, you know, so it wasn't though until I got to New Zealand and I was staying, with this family. And, you know, one of my mentors, really one of my heroes, was this woman named Raina Webster. And, Raina is a Maori filmmaker. She had gone to film school in the US. And, I remember like, about 6 months into living in New Zealand, you know, I used to go over to her house a lot and just kind of hang out and get to feel like I was back home. And she kind of looked at me and she was like, I don't think you want to do what you say you want to do, Roy. And I that's not how she sounds, but it's my best impression. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think I want to be a lawyer. I want to work in policy or something. I think I want to do something more artistic, more creative. And so she was the one who really kind of, I think, believed in me enough for me to believe in myself. And, you know, so I say all that to say, like, USC was like a part of that conversation, but it wasn't preeminent. Like I wasn't someone who was like, I'm going to go to like film school and like USC is the place I'm going to go. And, I think it's a pretty common story actually for Native filmmakers. When I talk to folks that, you know, a lot of our ancestors, I think in Native film world, come to it because they were doing something else and there was like a problem that they saw they could solve in filmmaking, which I find really powerful. And I try and tell others and tell, you know, younger people who are thinking about it, where like you don't have to be the kid with like a Super 8 camera, you know, making homemade movies. You can be doing plenty of things, and in some ways sometimes that actually works better. Anyways, I actually decided to go to USC first because they would have me. That was actually the only place I got into film school. But I had decided to apply because I had gotten bed bugs. And all the other film school apps required a film. And I was not going to make a film by the deadline because I was basically turning my house into a sauna with this guy named Randy and my partner Phoebe. And I was like, I gotta get this in. And so I did. I was like, I was flying somewhere for a wedding, and I remember finishing this application and like trying to time it up with the, I don't know what you want to call it, like the speaker, the big voice in the airport. I don't know what the word is.
The public address system.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Like the place is telling you like gate 4 is leaving. So I was like trying to like time it up with that. And you know, I think it turned out now, I look back on it a year ago, like so serendipitous. Like it's kind of it's been a, I think it's a place where I feel not always at ease, but I do feel seen. And you know, USC is a pretty unique film school. It's pretty big as far as film school goes. It's 1,600 students. It's very American, and I don't say that pejoratively, but it's very, you know, I think it's the oldest film school in maybe the United States, but definitely in LA. It was started in the late 20s. If you go to campus, there's a statue of Douglas Fairbanks kind of swashbuckling.
Hopefully our listeners will know who Douglas Fairbanks is.
If you don't, I'm not sure that I actually do. I've just read the placard.
Rory, let me just hold you right there. We'll play an announcement and we'll come back here. And I want to hear more in the next segment about the actual technical production and then a lot of what you are experiencing out there, particularly with the Native community, with their efforts in trying to be seen and some efforts that you're kind of related to there with your own, the advisor in one of the programs there. But hold on just a second, and I'll be right back with you. We're going to listen to a little message here, and then we'll have a little music that Rory was suggesting earlier. So,
this is Arlo, and they said they'd put me on the radio if I said that I like KFAI. That's the best deal I've had all day.
Let me ride on the wall of death one more time. Let me ride on the wall of death one more time.
chances on the wall of death. On the wall of death, all the world is far from me. On the wall of death, it's the nearest to being free.
Wall of Death by Will Dorado and Ken Pomeroy, James McAllister. And that is appropriately from the movie Twisters, the sequel to the original Twisters. You know, I took your sister to see the original, and I think it traumatized her.
Traumatized me with how bad it was.
Yeah. Wall of Death referring to tornadoes, twisters there. So, yeah. But that's one of Rory's favorite artists there, Ken Pomeroy. Where does she identify from? I know you said she's from Moore, Oklahoma.
I think she's, being from Moore, I feel like that's an identity crisis in of itself. My friend Blake Pickens would say that. I think she's Salaga. I think she's Cherokee.
Oh, okay.
From up north.
But. Yeah, okay. All right. I played her different tracks earlier this year as well, and she may have even been in town, I think, this past summer at like the Ice House. That was kind of fun there to listen to that. We're going to have something else that Rory selected shortly here at the next break. So, cool. All right. Well, let's go back to this idea of choosing a USC, but also now kind of talk about some of the key individuals there. I know, like with the woman that you're going to be working on a project in the next year, 2025. But what is her background? And it's kind of a unique connection to Native America.
I can't talk about the project just yet.
Okay.
But, I think what's cool about the program is the STARC program is a producer's program. It's like half business, half film, which was really interesting to me because I, you know, had been working in New Zealand and had been really interested in, I think, the ways in which our art was being, I wouldn't say corroded or corrupted, that's too strong a word, but I saw people, I think, having to make choices based on what they could get funding for. And I read this really great book. I give it to everyone if I can find copies. Sometimes it's out of print. But it's called Our Own Image by Barry Barclay. And he has this line in there that, you know, it's a sovereign right of Native peoples to be able to tell their own stories in the way that they wish to tell them. And I'm paraphrasing him. He says it much more eloquently. But I've always been, I think, really interested in, you know, a film is really, to quote from the book again, really just like calling a big meeting. And I think working in a team to solve sometimes what feel like impossible situations or problems, and that also requires resources. And so the program's this really, I think, interesting mix of, you know, working with the actual physical act of making a film, but also how does the industry actually function. And So it's a cool mix. The chair of our program is a guy named Ed Saxon, who had been an independent producer for quite a long time. And he and I talk about the Midwest a lot. And then our associate chair is a woman by the name of Nina Yang Bon Jovi. And Nina's a real hero of mine because she's produced a lot of films that I think meant a lot to me. So she produced Dope in 2015 with Rick Famuyiwa, Sorry to Bother You. And she most recently did Fancy Dance by Erica Tremblay. And I think has always, done what I aspire to do, which is to, I think, uplift people and tell them that their stories are valid and try and help them find whatever it is they need to help keep those stories going. So, and for all of my cohort who may listen to this in the moment or in the future, I really value my cohort. It's a really good group of people from all around the U.S. and the world. So.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't Nina have a connection with Chloe Zhang or not?
I think so. Yeah, she did. She produced Chloe Zhao's first film, Songs My Brother Taught Me, which was set on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
So. Right. And I had a chance to interview her years ago, and then we included that. You know, your mom and I have these irregular Native or Indigenous film review shows, and so we did review that. And then also recently Fancy Dance, we both enjoyed that. A lot of familiar scenes there in the northeastern Oklahoma area as well. So, tell us a little bit how you mentioned the industry. I know you've told us you're getting exposed to a lot of the big studios, others that are working on projects, and I know maybe you can't necessarily talk about them, but you've seen them begin to develop both in television. Now with streaming services really taking a prominent place beyond just the studios, or the studios are kind of morphing into those partnerships where you see something that's introduced in multiplexes, and then a week or a month later they show up on Netflix or Amazon or all that. Have you had any exposure to that or getting a sense of how that begins to work?
Yeah. I think the short answer is yes. I find it such a kind of like fascinating system. I think particularly because I'll talk with a lot of my international classmates who, you know, are from places where there's pretty significant government funding. And my start in filmmaking was in New Zealand, where New Zealand has a lot of what they would call physical production, so things are set there. But actually, a lot of New Zealand films like first start, you know, their genesis with like the New Zealand Film Commission. It's not always the case. There's kind of famous examples. So, What We Do in the Shadows, the film, was entirely privately financed. But more often than not, a lot of, you know, you get funding from like a British Film Institute or a National Film Commission, and we don't really do that in the U.S., which I find really interesting. But I think the private financing is kind of fascinating because you have really different entities and they're kind of all in the same ballpark, but their goals look really different, right? So like Netflix is a really large buyer of content. I actually don't love using the word content, but you know, they do a lot of the buying of films and television today, but they don't have a library. Like they don't have a historical studio library in the way that like Amazon is this huge company and they bought, I think, MGM and 2022, and I find that interesting as someone who watches a lot of like old film and really likes things that I don't know, you know, sometimes I'll, if I'm just looking for something to watch, it's like I'll like Google like a film from the 50s or something just to get. I had COVID a couple weeks ago and I watched the original Dragnet from 1951 on the Roku channel. Me and all of the other card-carrying AARP members. I would say, you know, and it's something that I want to be, like, humble about that I don't really want to evangelize anything, but I think sometimes that can be a challenge for lots of Native people, where it's a very capital and capitalism intensive industry, and that can be a real challenge. But I find a lot of strength in, I think, trying to understand the ways in which the industry is working or not working, and then also then trying to get as many projects as you can off the ground, and in understanding that, also I think trying to remain true to the vision of whatever that might be. And so yeah, I probably, if you ask my professors, I ask a lot of questions that they're probably annoyed by.
Well, give us a sense of how a movie from, whether it's like an adapted screenplay from a pre-existing source or maybe an original screenplay, you know, how does that get into the mix or the pipeline, and what would be your role in producing to bring that to fruition? I know there's a lot of steps in between,
yeah,
very similar to theater, like I've been involved in, but, you know, casting and directing, and then production. I want to hear, maybe in the third segment we can talk a little bit about production. I know you've been involved in your own small films or short films along with your cohort, because that's a good grounding even as producers. Some of which in the past, that's been one of the complaints, is that producers don't have a background in art or filmmaking. So,
it's true.
But tell us a little bit about that, how that the whole process begins and all the way to the end.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like, if you, I think it's, this is not a besmirchment of my fellow producers, if I am a producer, but, like, sometimes you'll watch the credits on, like, an independent film or something, and, like, there's, like, 22 producers, and so right. It's like, what did all of these people do? Like, were they just drinking coffee on set? And the answer is, like, there's a lot to do, and there's a lot of different types of producing. So, you know, creative producing, which is what I am studying or thinking about a lot, is how do you take a project, sometimes that may not even have, like, a script, and try and get it made. You know, we're in this era where most things actually start that way without a script. They're adaptations. They're what they call intellectual property, you know, or IP, which is, you know, I'll be candid and say, like, the concept of intellectual property to me is kind of a strange one.
Yeah, I think many Native people would agree with you.
Yeah, but that is how most things start. So, you know, an IP could be as simple as, you know, my favorite example is there's a movie called Zola that came out a few years ago, and that was like a Twitter thread. And that's IP. You have to pay for that. But, you know, article, like Top Gun was a, I think a Newsweek article.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't remember what publication. But they could be like books, previous films, format, what they call format rights, which is something international that you're adapting for maybe like an English language audience.
Right.
I think a lot of why there's a push for IP, from what I, when I ask people, is that there's just so much stuff being made today that it's more likely to break through because there's already usually like a built-in audience for it in some place. And but, you know, from there you like commission writers, and it kind of depends, right? Like there's independent producers, there's also in studios, and so those processes look pretty different. But, you know, you're taking that and you're turning it into a script, and each of those will have different setups in terms of whether it's a film, whether you're trying to do it for film or television, or some other type of media. But because they'll look different and they'll hire different people. But you do what's called, as far as I understand it, packaging, which is, you know, trying to, basically, I think in a lot of ways, I think about it like a sports team where, like, you know, you have a vision for, like, we're going to go out and win the Super Bowl this year. And, well, to win the Super Bowl, like, you need to have a blueprint, and you need to understand what you're trying to do and why you think your blueprint will work better than others. But the thing that actually actualizes that blueprint are, like, the players and the coaches and the staff. And Those are the pieces, you know, when someone's like, you hear someone say like, well, so-and-so is attached to a project. That's what that means. And, you know, so those, that's like before you even get to not even, you know, what they would call principal photography, but like even pre-production, you're putting some of those pieces together. And then you have like pre-production, your principal photographers and you're actually shooting. And then your post, which is like editing and sound and any visual effects and, and things like that. And then, you know, all of your marketing campaigns and your various, you know, press junkets. And sometimes, you know, so sometimes like people will tell you like that can take years if everything goes right and smoothly, which, you know, usually things don't in my... From what I have heard, you know, I'm not that experienced in the industry, but yeah, I think that's the general gist of it. I don't know. I think I'm really interested in just getting more native stuff made. I think a lot of native stuff gets shepherded through independent production. I think you're starting to see that change with the success of things like Res Dogs, which went through Hulu and FX. Hulu is the distributor, where studios are starting to see that there's more, there's a market for content that involves native people and you know, it doesn't just have to be kind of like an independent financier. So yeah.
Okay, let's take another break here, and then when we come back, I want to hear a little bit about the technical aspects that you're getting exposed to and learning, and I think maybe that you were originally interested in, and now you're kind of involved in the big picture, but of course the filmmaking process itself is an important element to that. But we'll talk about that in just a minute or so. We're going to take a quick break. Just a reminder that you're listening to KFEI Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM HD1 in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and streaming around the globe at kfai.org. We are non-commercial, community-powered radio.
KFAI is proud to present Twin Citizen at the 7th Street Entry on Friday, January 17th. Twin Citizen is a Minnesota-based band that incorporates a vast spectrum of musical styles and is dedicated to a unique and accessible style of indie rock music. Opening the show are fellow local acts Airlands, Joe Bartel, and Larry Wish. Tickets for Twin Citizen can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Return to the woodlands, I'll return to the snow, I'll return to the hills and the valleys below. If I return as a pawn, or a king if God wills, on my way home to the Piney Wood Hills. I was raised on a song there. I've done right, I've done wrong there. And it's true, I belong there.
and it's true, it's my home.
Piney Wood Hills by Dirt Roads. They are he is a Diné Navajo musician and artist out of Arizona. That's one of Rory's favorite artists that he has been following. I didn't know you liked country and westerns so much.
I spent a lot of time in the southeastern part of Oklahoma, and there's a lot of time pondering with my cowboy boots on.
Okay. Here, I spent a lot of time trying to get away from that. I thought I'd gone as far as I could. So
the circle of life.
Yes, okay, Simba. All right. Okay, all right. Let's get back to this, talking about films instead of country and western music here. So go ahead and you kind of ended there with independent films, so-called small-scale films, and then even now these student projects that you're involved in.
Oh, man.
Kind of give us a glimpse of that.
Well, student film is an arduous task. Independent film, I think, is where a lot of Native film lands, which basically means that, you know, a studio, particularly a Hollywood studio, isn't funding it. It's a very, I think, an American-centric landscape where, you know, pretty much anything that's not funded by the major studios in Hollywood would be considered independent cinema in a way. World cinema is kind of a separate thing and more academic. I think to most folks, they think about Hollywood cinema and independent cinema. And so, I think if it's kind of an interesting experience being a Native person in film school, because a lot of the Native filmmakers that I really love, like, didn't go to film school. Or they went to programs that are not, like, kind of, for lack of a better term, like, capital F film school. Like, you know, they went to, like, just your normal college and had a film studies program and were making stuff, and which I think is great.
Kind of like what I wanted to do, but I couldn't afford to buy all the film in those days.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's really, like, part of it is, Spike Lee always talks about, like, he went to NYU because he needed access to equipment. And I think increasingly, like, one of my favorite filmmakers, Ladd Lee, who lives in Paris, got his start basically shooting documentary films about police brutality on his phone in France, and made a really excellent film called Les Miserables a few years ago. And I find that really inspiring, you know, that you've got this, like, thing in your pocket that for a lot of times makes me really anxious, but, you know, I think in some moments can be really, really powerful. And, those challenges are really democratizing now, actually. And so, I think the benefit of film school, and I didn't really understand this maybe until I went, but, like, is really the sense of, like, collaboration. I think if you can find collaborators, and I had collaborators in Minneapolis and still do, but I think it's given me a bit more of an ability to experience other film cultures. So, like, I'll go see films with folks in my program, and sometimes I'll really hate something and they really love it, and it's really fun to argue about it in a kind of hopefully non-scarring way. But, you know, like, I was working on this project this fall that was really inspiring, and I'll shout out, you know, two of my friends in the program, so Emma Kuipers and Amvita Reddy, and both Amvita and Emma are not from the U.S., and, you know, the project we were shooting was, like, half in Anishinaabemowin, and, you know, my, at the last minute, my partner, if she's listening, the love of my life, stepped in to play a ghost who is speaking primarily in Ojibwe. But it was really cool because, you know, Emma had been working professionally in Europe for almost a decade, and Anvita, you know, had grown up in this very different film culture in Hyderabad, in India. And I felt really touched, I think, just by the way that it allowed me to also think about where I came from as having a unique film culture and a unique storytelling culture. And I think sometimes in the U.S. it kind of gets flattened into, like, well, we're all a part of this big American institution, or, you know, we're all in independent cinema. And I think really my hope for a native cinema, especially now that, and by cinema, I guess I mean really anything that involves moving image, which is like a very academic way of basically saying, like, you know, anything from like I rewatched Thor: Love and Thunder, the past week. I think that film probably deserves a reconsideration. It's pretty fun. I really like Cork. All the way to, like, you know, like kids shooting, you know, I know I said earlier, like, you don't have to be the kid with, like, a Super 8 camera, but, like, you know, I see my niece and nephew just, like, playing around on phones and, like, doing funny stuff. And, like, any of that and all of that, you know, is part of that. And I really, I think, would hope for something that's more diversified and is not just, I think, the stories that traditionally have been told about us that usually involve some, you know, pain or suffering or something that usually isn't actually really about us. And so, you know, I think in this era, in this moment, like, any and all of that feels really valid and powerful to just, I think, tell stories about, like, Toni Morrison. I think, you know, I really subscribe to her. And I think both her work and her art, but, you know, she made a comment once of, like, it's so easy to be bad, or it's so easy to write characters who are cruel and mean. It's a lot harder to write things that are good. And, you know, I think it feels like a moment where there's so many ways for so many Native people to, like, make the stories that they want to make and have an audience for them. You know, usually, traditionally, that's been the hardest part. And, I think hopefully make stories, though, that are about us succeeding, or our dreams, or are about us laughing or doing funny stuff. I was talking to somebody about a story that I'm working on that made me laugh. So hopefully it makes other people laugh this morning.
Yeah, it's kind of that fine line between what the industry says is, you know, whether this is sellable versus what is artistic and what touches people, which is transformational rather than just simply transactional.
I'll watch it. I don't have any money, but I'll watch it. You know? So
there you go. Send all your homemade movies to Rory, and he'll give you a professional's perspective on it.
So. It's all great. Keep making stuff. I cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. I was going to say I probably need to take one more break here, and then we'll end it up here with some special music. Here.
Let's take a break.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back with you. This is Good Medicine here on KFEI, Fresh Air Community Radio.
KFEI is proud to present Jackie Blue at the 7th Street Entry on Friday, December 27th. With a unique blend of contemporary R&B and jazz, local artist Jackie Blue presents Into the Blue, featuring support from Casey and Sophia Aris. Tickets for Jackie Blue can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Okay, thank you, Miguel. That was our program director. All right. Okay, we're just here in the last moments of Good Medicine this evening here, actually right before the Christian holiday of Christmas. But Rory, if some parting words here, if I just pose to you the question, who are your influences, either producing, directing, acting?
That's a good question. Man.
Truffaut?
Do they have to be in film?
Oh, no, not necessarily, I guess.
I think my biggest influence as kind of any type of art form is a poet named Hanif Abdurraqib. I read this book he has called They Can't Kill Us Till They Kill Us at a pretty formative time when I was thinking about moving into filmmaking, and that kind of pushed me over the edge because I had never been so moved by an essay about Carly Rae Jepsen. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I think my dad's cousin, Mary Lou. Mary Lou lives in, where does she live now? She lives in Yukon, Oklahoma. If you drive out past I-40, you got to go about another 20 minutes on your way to Amarillo. And yeah, she's just got so many stories about life, and I could just sit there for hours with her, and she just weaves them all together. I remember the first time I sat with her out there, and it was like 95 degrees, and I felt like I was living the textbooks that I had read, because I was listening to someone actualize them.
Well, her dad, my uncle, great uncle, was a pretty good storyteller too in his time.
Yeah. And I think my third influence would be Rhina Webster. Rhina has done a lot of things in her life, including being a filmmaker, but I think just as how to be in the world and how to be an artist and how to think about art, and she really believed in me. She used to sing to me where I'd be like, well, Rhina, I don't, I'm not good at this. And she's like, the point's not to be good. The point is that you have something to say. Mm-hmm. And I remember that a lot now. And that's what I try to, think about with young Native people is, each of them, really any Native person. I think we're all kind of, we watched Red One the other night. So, all of us have an inner child, has exemplified that. But, we've all got something to say. And it's worth being said. So, those are my three.
Oh, that's great. That's what I was going to end with. What advice would you give to young Native people, either in the industry or not? But that's a good way of addressing it there.
Yeah. So,
any last word you want to share with us before we...
What should we eat for dinner? Should we get wings?
Okay. I should tell everybody he's been... in my ear today about a podcast. Let's do a podcast together. So that may be in the offing here. We'll have to stay tuned.
Yeah. But still be a member at KFAI. I am. Yeah. Member Drive Week. Member Drive Hour.
Oh,
I just always wanted
to
be on during Member Drive. I wanted to take back Member Drive Week. But sorry, I'm talking now.
Okay.